I'm trying to elevate small talk to medium talk.
Hi, I'm Alexander Chester, and I think I've given you the wrong impression. My anus is fine.
And I'm Bob Sedensky, and I'm not even the captain of PPPBG. I'm a guy who keeps the captain company.
Welcome back to PPPPPG, as you called it. Pretty. How many P's was that? Pretty.
I don't know. Yeah, I think I said good. One extra P.
Yeah. A Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. We are here today to discuss season 6, episode 10, the season finale, the Bat Mitzvah, which originally aired on Armistice Day, November 11th, 2007.
Oh, wait, no. So not the real Armistice Day.
No, well, I guess, yeah, it's Veterans Day now.
It didn't air on November 11th, 1917.
Yeah. Normal people call it Veterans Day, right?
Yeah. Veterans Day is November 11th. It's not like a floating holiday.
Yeah, they originally called it Armistice Day, and then they renamed it Veterans Day later, I think. I'm not fact-checking that. So I'm not Googling it. So, yeah, if you want to fact-check me. Yeah, so we have the Bat Mitzvah. Yeah, we've had the Seder. We had, of course, on Seinfeld, we had the Bris. We've had so many Jewish ceremonies represented as episode titles. Well, I don't know if The Survivor is a Jewish ceremony.
Being confronted by a Holocaust survivor is a Jewish ceremony.
Yes, and of course, we had a Jewish wedding in that episode as well, of course. So this week we have a Bat Mitzvah. How old is your oldest daughter?
She is turning 8 in October.
Turning 8. All right, so you're going to beat me in the Bar Bat Mitzvah game by about 4 months, I believe. Yeah, because my son will be turning 9 in January. Yeah, and you have the Bat Mitzvah the year earlier in our tradition. So, yeso you have what? Just 4.5 years to 3.5 years. My math is off to prepare for a Bat Mitzvah. Are you getting ready already?
We are not getting ready already. That's crazy. I didn't even think of that. That's creeping up on us.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you, when we moved to my neighborhood, and this is in 2017, so at the time my oldest son was 4.5, and we joined a synagogue, and like a week into being at the synagogue, somebody from the office of the synagogue sends an email to like all the membership, you know, a couple hundred people, whatever it is, and said, if you recently contacted the office about a bar mitzvah in July 2026, please contact us again. And I'm like, well, that's a very strange email to send. First of all, it's strange in general. Like, you spoke to someone, you don't remember who you spoke to, so you're going to spam an entire listserv, you know, to find out who it is. But I forwarded it to my wife, and I said, like, how funny is this and absurd is this that they're already plotting out bar mitzvahs 9 years in the future? And then she said to me, well, but like, if they are doing that, you might as well give them our kids like dates of the bar mitzvahs. Just put it on the calendar. I guess they already have a calendar. And I'm like, you're making so many assumptions about your life and your kids' lives. And
yeah, I mean, but what's the downside?
Yeah, I guess. So I felt like silly doing this, but I'm like, all right. So I sent an email, and I responded to the email from the office, and I said, hey, you know, this happens. Remind me, we just moved to town. And our kids' bar mitzvahs, I guess, would be this date. And the office responds immediately. First date's already taken.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's odd. And then I said,
it's really not.
Yeah. And then I said, well, can we share it? Are there like different services or different like floor? And she says, nope. The other family says, no sharing permitted. Which, by the way, who's down? Who's against sharing? You get, you know, you cut your cost in half. But I don't know. Apparently, some people here are not fans of sharing. And so
there you go. You got to move now.
Yeah. So my son's bar mitzvah will not be when his, you know, his birthday is. And then the other thing is, I've lived here for 4 years, and I'm like, well, you know, I go to synagogue pre-COVID. I go to synagogue, you know, multiple times a week, and I get to know people pretty well. The people my age, the people who have a kid my kid's age, he would know. He'd play with them in like the youth groups or whatever. I don't know anyone whose birthday is like within a couple days of my son. Who could it be? And then I think I talked about the Little League thing a couple weeks ago. So I'm like sucked into this like Little League as like a coach or whatever. And so I happen to see like,
I just signed my kid up and I'm not a coach.
Someone
else is going to coach.
Such a better strategy.
Yeah, much better.
You had the great line. You said, if a league is dependent on my participation to succeed.
Yeah, there's not going to be a league.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, this league I'm in is at that level. And there's barely a league. And anyways, and I happen to notice these two kids whose family I know, like they live on our block about five houses down or whatever. and I know them from synagogue, and they have twin boys, and apparently their twin boys are the exact same age as my son, and I had no idea. Wow. And now I feel somewhat justified. They don't want to share. They're already sharing. They got two twins. They're not going to make it like a three-way bar mitzvah, so that's fair.
Yeah. Mm. How's your post-Passover no chametz streak going? Mm.
I've yet to have any leavened bread yet or anything leavened. It's going good.
Yeah. So my one of my big pet peeves is the whole like where you have to wait like 90 minutes when Passover ends to
buy back. Well, okay. You're going to have to do a lot of explaining here.
Yeah. So, okay. So the way it works is the rabbis realized however many years ago that like it would be ridiculous to expect like Jews to, like literally destroy or throw out all of their non, you know, Passover appropriate food because.
But I think you have
like,
to go, but you have to explain even further. It's not just we don't eat bread. Anything
you're not allowed to own it, right? You're not allowed to own.
You're not allowed to have ownership. You're not allowed to have in your house any food, basically any food. Period. So you got to get rid of alcohol. You got anything with corn syrup. Anything with any
because corn syrup is bread now. Yeah, and peanut butter.
Corn syrup, of course, like peanut butter is bread. Spoiler for next week.
A peanut butter sandwich is just it's a sandwich with another slice of bread in the middle.
Yeah, and then if you have a beer on the side or like a shot of
also bread. Everything is bread.
You got to get rid of every single piece of food not in your house, and you can't just put it in the garage. You have to seize ownership of it, because this is when God told the Israelites to leave Egypt, and they left and they didn't give their bread time to rise. Obviously the intent there was you cannot have beer in your house 4,000 years later.
Yeah, so basically, you know, what the tradition has been for, you know, hundreds of years now, that on like the day before Passover, the rabbi of the community will find some, you know, willing Gentile from the neighborhood and say, hey, you know, you're going to, quote, buy all the chametz or, you know, non-Passover food of all the Jews in the neighborhood.
But it's technically like a legally binding contract.
Technically, but obviously it's bullshit.
Well, yeah, because he's not going to come back. He's not going to refuse 9 days later to sell you your,
so we'll sell to you for X dollars. And then, you know, wink, wink, we're going to come back you in 9 days and offer to repurchase all of this, you know, food from you for, you know, X plus Y for, you know, so that way you make a little bit of profit. Obviously, you're completely indifferent to this whole thing because what do you give a shit about which, you know, stale Cheerios are sitting in some Jew's pantry? So every Passover, like the rabbi will remind you. So yeah, technically Passover ends at 8:06, but you can't eat any of your food in your pantry until 9:38
because I got to negotiate with the Gentile.
I have to go buy back the food from the Gentile. And like my wife will always be like, oh, we're supposed to wait till 9:38. I'm like, we don't have to wait till 9:38. Like Passover's over. This has nothing to do with Passover. It's just whether you think you're violating a sham transaction with a Gentile who in theory is going to come to your house and demand that what you present to him.
Stop eating that cereal, you thief.
That's my cereal. Right. This isn't happening. This isn't real. Like you can, we can give the kids Cheerios. Like they've been like itching for Cheerios for 9 days. They can have it. They don't have to wait till tomorrow. It's fine.
Yes, when you put it that way, it is quite odd. Yes, our religion is very strange.
There's a tradition. Many, many people like they like rush on, you know, Passover night, the night after it ends, to run and get pizza from the local kosher pizza store because, you know, I haven't had pizza in a week. I'm gonna die.
This is not only like Orthodox Jews, by the way. I have this vivid memory as Passover was ending when I was in college one year. I was walking back from the Hillel to my dorm, and I passed these two guys who were Jewish but not like noticeably observant as far as I knew. One of them was actually the class president of the class below me, I remember, in my college, so, you know, sort of a prominent guy on campus. And as they walked past me, I heard them say, oh my god, I'm dying for pizza. And the other one said, can I get it with bread as a topping? And I'm thinking, oh, like, they're Jewish and keeping Passover, good for them. I was very proud of them. Funny. So yeah, he wanted bread as a topping.
So people will rush to always get pizza, and it's like sometimes you have to like wait like in line for like an hour and a half, because like the whole neighborhood is descending on like two pizza stores to get pizza. So, you know, as I've mentioned on a previous episode, that, you know, I'm a little less lax when it comes to eating certain foods, and like pizza is a thing that I make an exception for if it doesn't have any meat items on.
Oh, the line is shorter at the non-kosher pizza.
Yeah, so the life hack I discovered like 5 or 6 years ago that I've indulged in is, you know, if you want to rush to get pizza the night after Passover, over, just go to the non-kosher pizza store, for which it's just like, oh, it's Tuesday night, there's no one there, it's great. So you just like waltz right in, you get your pie, you're done. What I discovered this year, a problem with my life hack, is that the night that Passover ended was Easter, and almost all the pizza stores in my neighborhood were closed or had closed early for Easter
in observance.
So I had to do a little extra legwork to get the pizza this year, but
I still have not had any pizza.
It ended okay. You still have not had anything. I guess you're just eating meat.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, I think I mentioned to you before we started recording, and I mentioned it in the 32 Fans patron chat, and I also mentioned on episode 32 Fans that I was, that I haven't eaten any bread yet. And then I mentioned that I was actually eating barbecue from a weekend, from 12 days ago now, that I had put in the fridge before Passover. And then among that barbecue, so we have like a little, like an older fridge, a smaller, older fridge in the basement. And so we took all our non-Passover food that we were selling to the Gentile and we put it in the basement fridge. And then on the little form where you list where your, you know, your stuff is, I said basement, whatever. And so I had like a baggie with old hot dogs and hamburgers from 12 days ago. And then I also had a couple of buns that we had because from the pre-Passover meal where we ate it outside on our patio and we used real buns because it wasn't Passover yet. And I brought, and then as we were turning our kitchen over a couple of days ago after Passover, I brought all the non-Passover stuff back upstairs, put it in like the kitchen, in the fridge, and we had a couple buns. And so the next day, Monday or whatever it was, it was probably Monday yesterday, I wanted to have some of the barbecue. And I said to my wife, I'm like, where are those buns? And she's like, oh, the 1.5 soggy, disgusting hamburger buns that were sitting in the same like baggie as all your gross meat from 12 days ago. Yeah, I threw those out. And I got so mad at her. Said, why did you throw those out? Like, those are perfectly, like, I was going to eat those buns.
And she's like, those are perfectly good buns.
Yeah. And so it's ironic that I'm now still not having eaten any chametz, three days later, whatever it is. I intended to. I wanted to eat those buns. She threw them out. So it's really her fault. Yeah.
Yeah. So, right. I certainly encourage you to continue in this ridiculous endeavor to not resume eating normal foods. Because I guess the entertainment of it is okay and does no skin off my back. So
yeah, there's literally zero upside for me. But which you could say about a lot of the things Larry David does on Curb. Why are you doing this, Larry? But so with that brilliant segue, why don't we jump into the bat mitzvah?
Yeah, let's go down to the bat mitzvah. So we are at home, and evidently Leon has called Jeff over to the house because the Black family has become concerned about Larry. He won't get out of bed. He's very depressed about Cheryl leaving him. Leon has even come to dub Larry with the nickname Mopey Dick. And Jeff's like, you mean Moby Dick, right? And he's like, no, not the book, because he's like, Mopey. His dick is moping. Very sad dick.
Yeah, I love how you pointed out that Jeff has been called here by Leon. I love the beginnings of the Jeff Leon relationship that we witness in this opening scene. It's delightful to me, and I think it's really it's almost a hint of where we're going next season, where Leon is going to really get more and more ensconced, not in velvet, but in Larry's life, and so he's becoming friends with Larry's friends. So now we see like Jeff and Leon having a relationship that passes the Beckner David test, where they don't. I mean, I guess they are talking about Larry, but they're having a scene without Larry at least.
Yeah, I mean, like,
successful than like early, Elaine George scenes without Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, the lessons of the, American presence in the Middle East is, you eliminate a bad person and you just create a vacuum. And, Cheryl goes out the door and just creates this huge hole in Larry's life to be filled. And Leon is going to seize that opportunity and he's going to fill it. And now it's him dealing with Jeff, to control Larry's emotions and keep his life going instead of Cheryl.
No, I gotta say, I had no idea where that metaphor was going.
Nor did I. It up as I went. I think it ended up okay.
Yeah, but then I started thinking about like in The Wire, how like the Barksdales get taken down, and then who comes back? It's Marlo Stanfield, who's even like harder. And
yeah,
and
that's a perfect one for one Middle East metaphor. Mm,
yeah.
Do you recall that the name of the drugs that they were selling in that season?
Yeah. No, I understand that, but I wasn't really sure how you were making the analogy to Cheryl and Leon.
Yeah, she just creates this huge vacuum in Larry's life, and it's like Leon swoops in. It's like, okay, now I'm the dominant figure in Larry's life. Let's see how this goes.
You're right. That's actually very good.
That. How do you like that, writers?
Yeah.
You thought you were going to liberate Larry? No, yeah. Leon's in now.
Yeah.
So they head upstairs to Larry's bedroom. And Larry's, he's in bed. He's not in good spirits. And they decide to, we're going to take a tough love approach with Larry. And, you know, you got to stop being mopey. Larry's like, I can't imagine myself with anyone other than Cheryl. And, you know, they talk about the bat mitzvah, but Jeff had mentions that, you know, Cheryl is coming to that too, with Glenn even, you know, to make it even worse. And Larry's just like getting more and more upset.
And hold on. And Jeff says, yeah, well, you know, he didn't pick sides. He and Susie explicitly told Larry they were siding with him. And I even said that Jeff like deserved come with guy points because when everyone else backed away, Jeff and Sue, you know, stayed loyal. But yeah, even Jeff's not picking sides.
Well,
anymore.
Everyone, I think at the meal picks up, said they're with Larry.
Yeah. Then reversed, but then they all reversed themselves in the episode, but Jeff didn't. Now even Jeff has.
Yeah. So he's reversing this episode. Yeah. Or at least he's going neutral.
Although, let's be honest, who's making the guest list for the bat mitzvah? It's much more Susie than Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, like, Susie's just like, no, Cheryl's coming. Fuck you. Fuck Larry.
Yeah.
And, like, what's Jeff supposed to do?
Yeah. No, that's fair.
Like, that's the entire conversation. No, I like Cheryl. I don't give a shit if Larry's there.
So, it's actually not that they don't take sides. It's that Susie took a side. It's Cheryl's side. She's probably like, you're lucky I'm inviting Larry at all. And so Jeff is like, yeah, Jeff has no hand here.
I don't think he's like taking Cheryl's side so much as he's just like taking her own side. She's like, I'm like taking Susie's side, which is like,
but
I
if
like
you're
Cheryl.
Susie and you have to invite one of them to your daughter's bat mitzvah, who are you inviting? You're inviting Cheryl.
I'm not inviting one. I'm inviting both. Like, fuck you guys. You know, whoever wants to come, come. Yeah. If you don't want to come, don't come. Fuck you, Larry. Don't come. I don't give a shit.
I will say,
if Cheryl wants to come with her boyfriend with the no fly zone, great. I think she's going to come. She's in a good place.
Larry does have a tendency to ruin large social gatherings and celebrations and make.
Yeah, no, you don't want Larry David at your social gathering. So, yeah. He's going to make a very embarrassing speech.
I mean, you and I do, and we definitely would. But in the world of Curb, yeah.
So, yeah, they're like, why don't you bring someone too? Leon's like, you know, you can become a different motherfucker. You can grow a beard, you can grow a mustache, some sideburns. Jeff's like, yeah, this sounds like good advice to me. Larry, you just need to get your ass out of bed.
Have you ever desire to become another motherfucker?
I remember when I...
What is it, sideburns? Mustache? Which one?
No, not quite to that extent. I do remember that when I used to live on the Upper West Side and I got married, we were moving up to Riverdale in the Bronx, and I was like, you know what? I could like totally reinvent myself. Like, I'm going to be moving to a new community, like new person, and then like I went to like shul on like the first Shabbos that I was there, and I was like, oh, I know everybody here. Like,
I was about to say, that's a completely false story in our little circle. Yeah, there's no chance.
No, that was the conclusion. I walked in the first day. I'm like, oh, I know 80% of the people in this room. Like, there's no reinvention here happening.
In the modern Orthodox world, there is no reinvention anywhere. Anywhere you go, you're gonna instantly know people or know people who know people.
It's certainly difficult.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly reinvent yourself, but you're gonna have to go a little more outside the box.
Yeah, you have to reinvent yourself, and everyone's gonna be like, "Why are you reinventing yourself? What's you're a completely different person than who you've been this entire time."
So I was just saying, just don't live among monorthodox Jews. live in the other 99.999% of the world population.
Yeah, but I have nothing in common with those.
Reinvent people. Away. All right.
So Larry, you know, fine, I'll get out of bed. He does this, like little ass shimmy. And Jeff's like, what are you doing? Like, he like kind of like rotates his butt as he gets out of the bed. And he's like, oh, something felt like a little uncomfortable there. Chekhov's itchy butt, as we'll say, I guess. So finally, you know, they drag him downstairs.
When Chekhov came up with like this this concept initially, or did he name it after himself, or did it get named after him later?
I think it probably got named after him later. It's probably the rule that he made with respect to the gun.
You want something to be named after. You want to be remembered. You know, you don't really want it when it's going to be associated with, like, itchy asses.
Yeah, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Well, I was going to say, Lou Gehrig, that's what I had in my head. I don't think you want to be associated with, like, a debilitating, painful, terrible disease that kills you.
No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Lou Gehrig is probably the fourth best hitter in the history of baseball, and nobody knows that. He's just Lou Gehrig's disease. Yeah, he was an old baseball player with like Babe Ruth or something, and now he has a disease named after him. Like, that's what people remember about him. Isn't it like, you know, Barack Obama always talks about how, like, you know, in the book of history, the best you can hope for is like your one little paragraph. And he's talking about himself. So you and I obviously don't even have like a piece of punctuation. But like, it's really true. Like, look at Lou Gehrig and like, look what we remember about him.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's very interesting. Yeah, I always think of that as like the random forgotten president. It's like Millard Fillmore. Like, he was president for 4 years.
Yeah.
And it's like nobody knows anything about Millard Fillmore. Like there's not a person that you could meet who'd be like could tell you more than a sentence. I literally could only tell you his name and that he was president. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you anything that happened. Like, I was president of the United States for 4 years and he's forgotten.
Yeah. Now, I will say that I have various presidential charts, which should not surprise
me. All right. So you've done a little bit more research than most.
Yeah. No, but still, like, there's nothing like what I always say, like, and I've gotten arguments with people about this. Like, I say, like, no one will remember George Bush 300 years from now. Nobody will.
Yeah, no way.
The number of presidents will be remembered will be from the 20th century. It'll be like FDR and then Kennedy, maybe Nixon for not the right reasons, maybe. And then maybe Reagan or Clinton, maybe. That's it. And then like Barack Obama will be remembered forever because he was the first black president. Like that historical value. Right now, half the country like despises him and, you know, and half the country's racist. And there's
I think Bush is more.
I wish we were recording. That was actually really funny. Why were we talking about George Bush?
I don't know.
Listeners should know there was a long gap in time, like for half an hour. So we were both doing different things.
Yeah, I lost my internet. I'm on my personal hotspot for my phone now. We'll see if this works.
It's working fine.
Yeah, I actually don't even care about this podcast anymore because. All I'm worried about now is that in the morning, my kids are going to want to use the iPad, and instead, I'm going to have to like deal with them and get out of bed.
Do your kids not have school tomorrow?
They have Zoom school.
Oh,
until Thursday.
My kids are in school, and let me tell you, the real festival of freedom is not Passover. It's after Passover when your kids go back to school.
So I will be in your boat Thursday morning. But tomorrow's another Zoom school day, which means that like we don't need to like get up and get them out early. Because it'll start school to like 9, so I can like sleep to like 8:40. But only if I have an iPad with working Netflix to give them.
Oh yeah, so. it's much worse. It's much worse when they have to go to school, like the 6:30 to 8:30 window. The rest of the day is so much better. So
yes, yeah. No, I'd rather wake up early and get them the fuck out of here.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be waking up in like 5 hours.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm going to go to sleep right after we finish recording this either. So let's be honest.
Oh, I imagine you're going to continue watching random clips of SNL.
Well, it's not that random. I'm watching last week's episode, but yeah.
Okay.
All right. A couple weeks ago, but you know, fairly recently. All right. So we were talking about George Bush for some reason.
Yeah, I don't really remember why.
We're talking about presidents and which presidents are famous. I think vaguely recall you were saying people might remember George Bush and his father sort of the way we remember John Adams and John Quincy Adams.
Right. So but I like, think like that puts him ahead of a lot of people.
That's it. But like John Quincy Adams was like this heroic abolitionist who after he's president and loses goes back and serves in Congress for like decades. Like nobody knows that or remembers that. It's only, it's the guy that him and his father with the same name were presidents like non-consecutively basically.
And yeah, so I feel like I feel like it's possible that the only president that we'll remember is Trump, and like everyone else will be forgotten to history, or he'll be completely forgotten. It's gonna be one or the other. It's like either like he's gonna be completely forgotten, or he's gonna be the only one that everyone remembers. Like that's like
history been deleted.
Yeah, we're like on a collision course with one of those two.
So you're still not past him. You still think he's he's had a very infectious effect on the culture and on significant portions of our population for sure. But you think him as a person may be coming back?
Well, not, even if it's not him as a person, I think there's still a very good chance that he becomes like a seminal figure in American history based on what the future ahead of us is. That is unwritten. We don't know where the future will go. If this politics continues, you know, he could be viewed as a forebearer of that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's hope not. And one of our listeners.
No, for sure. Let's hope not. Let's hope he's eliminated immediately, you know, taken off the board.
All right. So where were we in the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I honestly don't know. I think Larry was coming downstairs. Leon brings him down to, hang out with the rest of the black family. And they're like, you know, forget about Cheryl. And he's like, all right, you're right. You're right. I don't even think about Cheryl anymore. Like, I'm going to go get back out there. And the blacks are like, speaking of getting out there, we're actually moving out of this house. Our house back home is finished and we're headed home. And Daryl at this very moment comes running out and he announces to the rest of the household that his gerbil has escaped. And everyone runs all over to try to locate the gerbil and return it to its proper location.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at work, you know, I guess probably later that day, and Larry's assistant Antoinette announces that someone is coming today to look to possibly rent the office space next to Larry's. And Larry is very upset because he has gotten accustomed to having this space empty and like not having to deal with like, I guess another person in the hall, potentially another person sharing the restroom on the floor, someone you have to see in the elevator. He likes that this office is empty.
Yeah. It's very strange, by the way, that the building manager is calling Larry's assistant to tell her he's showing another unit in the building that's not their unit. By the way.
I guess, you know, it's just more maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Although I would like a warning if Michael McKean was showing up in my life, because Michael McKean is very annoying. The characters he plays, I should say. I don't know him personally. But and I should say the only things I really know him from is this episode of Curb and then other episodes of Curb and then Better Call Saul. Yeah. So, so maybe he's just a very good actor.
Maybe he wanted to give him a heads up, like, "Hey, I'm gonna have a tenant there. Like, don't do any like extremely offensive and embarrassing impressions." While I have him there. Mm.
By the way, showing, So, I mean, I'm looking at Michael McKean now. I'm like embarrassed. So he was, he starred in Laverne and Shirley, which is obviously way before my time, and he's in a million Christopher Guest things. As is a special guest who will be on the first episode of next season. Obviously. Bam, bam.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So she's like, okay. Also, Matt Tesler called and he's going to be stopping by. And we learned that this is a guy who was a director on Seinfeld. Of course not actually, just this is a made up thing. And Larry is like, oh God, like, I don't want to deal with this. I bet what he wants is, you know, he wants to get a job working for Richard Lewis and his new pilot. And he's probably going to want me to like make a hookup for him. And he's just a terrible director. I really don't want to have any part of this. And, you know, I think his son has some sort of disability. I don't know if it's an MS or MD or something. As they're talking, Matt drops by and sure enough, he talks about how he's been stuck in the Dramedy ghetto ever since he directed that cancer scare episode of Home Improvement. Mm. He got typed as the guy who does ticker. I don't know what any of these
they're all made up, I assume, aren't they?
Yeah, I have no idea. I tried looking up whether like ticker meant anything. I couldn't find it. But he wants to get back into the funny, do the shtumi. Again, I have no idea if this is a real word or a made up word or Larry David.
So here's the thing. Shtumi is a Yiddish noun. A shtum is someone who like is silent or mute. So shtummy, and he says it with like a Yiddish accent. He says, I want to do the shtummy. Like shtummy would be the opposite of the silly comedy that Matt Tesler seems to be implying by his use of the word here. Shtummy would be something like very quiet and like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. Yeah. So he's like, yeah, can you, can you put in a good word with me for Richard? And Larry's like, yeah, I guess I can recommend you. Like he feels very cornered by this guy. He doesn't really have a choice.
Now, by the way, between this scene and so far at this point in the scene and his name, Matt Tesler, if you had to guess the religious persuasion of Matt Tesler, what would you guess it to be?
Well, I think based on Shtumi and that he's a writer in Hollywood, we're going to say he's a Jew.
And his name is Tesler. And we haven't even got to when he will know a doctor named Rosenberg simply by the last name. But it's very strange because we'll learn by the end of the the next scene that he has a Jewish name. He uses Yiddish, but not a Jew.
Not a Jew.
Yeah. Or maybe he is, and it's just his son who's on the right hand of Jesus.
Yeah, right. As they're talking, Antoinette pops back in and she wants to know, Larry, do you still have that tickle in your anus?
This is such an incredible faux pas. It's like Larry obviously enraged. It's fucking insane. Like you should get fired 1,000 times out of 1,000 for doing this, right? I mean,
yeah, you don't really disseminate this information in front of a third party.
I mean, why does Larry's assistant know about his private medical history anyway?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, so even
this
if he
is why
like,
Larry
her,
couldn't fire her, as he previously said.
Right. She knows all the secrets.
Yeah.
About, she knows all about the gerbil up the butt.
Yeah.
Mm. Larry is like, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. There's no tickle. But Matt's like, oh, you know, if you really need a GI, my cousin works for a gastroenterologist.
Well, hold on. You skipped it. You skipped it. He says, who are you going to? And then when she says, Antoinette says Rosenberg. And again, he knows him simply by his last name.
Right. He's like, oh, he's better than Rosenberg.
Rosenberg is I love this line from Tesler, from Michael McKean. Rosenberg is a good man. I've got a better one. Pencil. Snap, snap. Pencil. And I love this. Like, so his wife's cousin manages the office of another doctor who's good at anal tickles. And so therefore, he knows the whole industry and he knows exactly who you go to. Rosenberg is good, but I got a better, what industry is this? Like, who do you go to for an anus tickle? I'm asking. I don't know.
I would say, either a gastroenterologist or a proctologist.
Yeah, but so gastroenterologist is what we'll hear later in the episodes. I guess that's the answer. Proctologist, which of course you and I know from Seinfeld, is not actually like a real thing.
There's no such doctor as a proctologist?
I don't think they call themselves that. I asked Jen about this once, right? Like there's doctors. Wait, what kind of doctor is your dad?
Gastroenterologist.
Yeah. Like, does he ever call himself a proctologist?
No, but I think that's a different doctor.
But like, he deals with like people who have like things up their ass, does he not?
He does, but he's like a stomach and like intestine doctor and the way to access those parts of the body is through the anus.
Yeah.
I think the anus is a separate body part that probably requires its own doctor. I guess. I don't know. I think it's a real thing.
Well, now I'm
yeah. Okay. Proctology, a branch of medicine dealing with the structure and diseases of the anus.
This is what it is. No, yeah. So yeah, Jen says, yeah, it's called a colon rectal surgeon.
Okay.
She says nobody says proctologist.
Colorectal surgery. Yeah.
Proctology is much easier to say.
Yeah. I mean, well, he's the ass man.
By the way, you Google proctologist, the number two hit is from colon90210.com.
I see that.
Yeah, the field is called colorectal surgery, is what the field is called. It says the field is also known as proctology, but this term is used infrequently within medicine and is most often employed to identify practices relating to the anus. Okay, so yeah, so within medicine, those nerds are calling it colorectal surgery. But the man on the street, like you and me, we're calling it proctology.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Has your dad ever told you any good stories about things that no one wanted to admit they stuck up there?
He's told me some very good stories.
Yeah, I know. A million to one shot, doc.
Yeah. He has, among other things.
I thought when I teed up, by the way, you said you were going to say your dad was a proctologist. But...
No, he's not. Yeah. He's a gastro. What's interesting is that, you know, as I said before, like he's not interested in the anus per se. He's interested in seeing something in somebody's stomach, intestines, liver. And it's only in order to get there, you have to do put a scope through the anus in order to see further into the body. And it's more that he has this, on the path to discover, what we see is wrong with this guy's stomach. He's like, oh, there's an obstruction. There's something in the way that for some reason this guy failed to mention. And among other things, he has discovered an umbrella handle,
of course,
a barbecue sauce bottle. Yes. I think those were the two most wild ones.
A million to one shot, doc.
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, again,
and,
in this episode,
and it's not just a million to one shot. It's a million to one shot. And I forgot that it was there. So I said, I'm having a problem with my stomach. Can you check
it
out?
Wait, these patients literally claimed that they forgot about it? I forgot to
mention
it. I don't
know. It's like, yeah, like in both of those scenarios, like the way he described it, it's not that the person said, oh,
I have an umbrella. Yeah.
It's like, oh, my stomach hurts. Can you like check me out? And like, he's like, no, I can't because there's like something there. And then he had to like remove a barbecue sauce bottle and then put in the scope so you can see what's wrong with the stomach. I don't know if, how connected the bottle was to stomach pain. I'll have to follow up about that.
Yeah. All right. So million to one shot, doc.
Yeah.
So yeah. So Larry needs an appointment and he's heard Rosenberg is good. Senensky is better.
Yeah. So, I don't like that this, I don't know he's a Jew because he seems to be steering people away from Jewish doctors to Gentile doctors. I'm not crazy about, the downgrade from the Rosenberg to the pencil.
Mm, yeah.
I got to go with the Jewish doctor.
Yeah. What about Jewish lawyer? Well, we'll learn about that next season.
Yeah, always go to a Jewish lawyer. Jewish lawyers know best. Mm. It's Larry just like really, he completely explodes here. I don't think we've ever really seen this with him and Antoinette before. Like he gets irritated with her.
But he needs to do it for the benefit of Tesla. Or so he thinks. Because he needs to deny.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's weird because he's trying to deny that it's true. But then he basically acknowledges and like accepts.
Right,
the
it's a protest to watch this situation.
So if you're Larry, it's like you have to say no. I don't need this. I don't know what you're talking about. Don't give me the name. It doesn't matter. You can't go to him. You got to go to Rosenberg.
Right. I mean,
there's like confidentiality and HIPAA rules in effect, and so they're not going to tell Tesla.
Yeah, I think we've established
for setting
on
us Larry
show
David.
That. Yeah, we're in a pre or post HIPAA world, whichever it is that gets us that we don't have to have to comply with HIPAA ever.
Correct.
We continue with Larry, and he's driving home in his car, or he's headed to somewhere in his car, and he calls Richard, and he said, hey, I just want to let you know, I just met with Matt Tesler, and he's interested in, the directing gig for your show, and I am hereby recommending him, because I think he would be great for your show, and therefore I am recommending him, This is a very dumb thing to do via voicemail.
Yes. Do you think Larry's voicemail is appropriately obvious?
I mean, I think it's obvious for us who know what he's doing. Yeah.
But if you hear the audio only,
no, watch you that can't, scene, this, close this your is eyes. Not an acceptable way for him to do what he's doing, where he's like doing like a sarcastic recommendation.
He does say, so that way, if he asks you, you can say that I recommended you. Like, you know, that's the closest part. But yeah, but it's pretty subtle. Yeah, I think Richard was not wrong for going and hiring the guy.
Well, I think he should just like do like a follow up call with Larry.
Yeah.
Just to be like, oh, you worked with him. Like, is he good? Like, you know, that's basic due diligence before you hire a director for your episode. Mm,
that's fair. Okay.
So we're now at the Gastro's office and Larry, you know, comes to the counter. They tell him to sign in and he's like, I don't want to sign in. Why should I have to write my name down?
Larry, in the medical waiting room yet again.
Yeah, he's like, you know, this should be private. Like, nobody should be able to just, like, walk off the street and see, like, oh, Larry David was at the gastroenterologist. Yeah. You know, therefore, he must have some anus problem. It should be private.
He's completely correct, and that's why this doesn't exist. You don't sign up, you know, your first and last name on a big public sign-in sheet when you come into a doctor's office that everyone can see.
Yeah, you do. At many doctor's offices, you do that.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I've never been to a doctor like that or a dentist
like
that.
Yeah, you write your name.
No, you tell them at the desk that you're there.
No, I've signed it. I for sure signed it at any doctor's offices. Yeah.
They give you so you could see other people's names on a sheet.
So I think what they do is like they have it on like they have like stickers. So like you sign it, they like they kind of like take your sticker off and like they probably put it on.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you register upon arrival. Yeah. Yeah. You don't get a list of.
Yeah, by writing down your name though.
Yeah, you fill out a bunch of forms. You have to write a whole bunch of shit. Yeah.
No, but there's also there's one sheet in many doctor's offices where you literally all you do is write your name out just to like that's how you let them know that you're here.
And then you get to see the whole sheet.
I mean, I'm sure there are doctor's offices where people have seen the whole sheet.
Because I've never experienced that. And when I watched it with Jen, she got madder about this violation of HIPAA than the other one. She's like, there's no medical office in the world that would have a public sign-in sheet. So
now as much, but I've definitely done something similar to this. Mm.
Okay. Because I was also wondering, like, you know, do they even like they never say your full name when they call you? But I was wondering if your name is John Smith and you're in a big waiting room, they can't just say John or Mr. Smith. So I guess.
I think probably what they do is they say John. And if two people come named John, get up, they figure it out. Like, it's not rocket science.
All right.
Sometimes they shave the wrong patients, but, you know, that's the worst that happens. He's like, you know, you really need to improve the process here in the waiting room. You know,
I love how Jeff is still bald, but it's growing back a little bit.
Yeah, it's growing back.
Yeah.
So yeah, he really appreciates it.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not an inventor. I'm an improver. Yeah, and this is a broken system that will now be improved by my suggestion. Mm. And, you know, finally he goes and he sits down and he's sitting next to another patient and he starts to flirt with her. And she's like, oh, are you from New York? And he says, yes, but I'm not a Jew, if that's what you're thinking.
Yeah. By the way, she hadn't said anything New York-y to that point. So he's very good with the subtle accent, I guess.
Yeah. And she's like, he's like, you know, oh, what are you in for? She's like, well, just a checkup. Mm. And he's suspicious. But when she asks him the same question, he says, yeah, just a checkup. No one wants to admit why they're at the gastroenterologist.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, you know, he asks her how the flirt is going and she gives him a 7.5, which I would say is pretty, 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 pretty good. I would take 7.5.
Sure. I don't know if you deserve
it. I'd give 7.5 birdies. You're not going to do better than 7.5 when you ask like that.
I don't want to cast aspersions and be accused of being a lookist or an ageist or whatever. But like if you look like Nadia Dayani, this actress who very exotic look. She's of Irish and Palestinian descent. And you see a Larry David at the doctor's office and you don't know who he is and you're unaware of his fame and his wealth. I mean, is his flirt's got to be really, 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 really good, I feel like. And I did not feel as good, that good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He needs to do better than a 7.5 to pick up this woman.
And then he starts like negging her. He's like, you must be very, very bright, which I get that he's saying it sarcastically, but like, you don't say that to somebody when you're trying to pick them up. I don't know. But she's down for Larry, so at this point anyway.
Yeah, Larry has the Kevorka, it seems.
I guess so. Something, yeah. He's picking up. I mean, you assumed when he was with Xena Warrior Princess that she at least knew who he was because she was in the industry.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the ladies seem to have an affinity for Larry. So, you know, unfortunately, she gets called in to the office before he can catch her name.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's Larry's turn to go in and he...
A little shades of the tractor incident, isn't it? A little bit. He's trying to find out, you know, what's wrong with her exactly.
Yeah, in a very similar region of the body. And Matt's cousin, the nurse, you know, greets Larry, and she wants to know what's going on. Why do you need to see the doctor? And Larry's like, yeah, I really would rather just, like, discuss that directly with the doctor. And she's like, well, you know, that's the policy. That's how this works. This is how we save time. And Larry's like, you know, I really don't think this system makes sense. It's a little bit askew, if you ask me, because I know that when the doctor comes in, he's going to ask me all these same questions, which is true. And it's one of my biggest pet peeves when going to the doctor. It's like, you spend so much time filling out all those fucking forms.
Oh,
and then, like,
so I will,
like,
give you a secret,
like, you've
from
never
my wife.
Existed before.
Yeah. My wife never filled out the forms. Nobody looks at them. Nobody reads them. Don't fill them out. And because I'm, like, anal retentive, when we go to the doctor for any of my kids or for, I'm sitting there and I'm filling out page 7. Does he have any of this? And Jen's like, nobody reads that. They have to ask the questions, like, for legal reasons and, like, for, like, liability reasons. They can't, like, give you a drug without asking and discussing what you're allergic to. It doesn't matter what you wrote on a form. Nobody looks at it. Don't waste your time. I mean, you need, like, the top line. You need your name and your birthday and your insurance information. But, like, you know, page 4, nobody's reading that. Not that I'm encouraging people to have.
I have, like, one doctor who, like, when I have an appointment with them, like, I get, like, an email, like, 24 hours before, being like, here's what we have as, like, your current medical stuff, like, confirm it. And, like, then when I show up, I don't have to fill out any forms.
Oh,
like, I love going to that doctor.
So now in COVID age, they're supposed to be like that. And so, you know, all the appointments that I've had or that my kids have had or that my wife has had, like, you have to fill out all this stuff online ahead of time, and it's supposed to speed up time. And then you show up there, in my experience, and then they still give you a stack of paper. And
yeah,
I'm like,
some
I filled out all the online stuff. I answered all these questions. And by the way, Jen was making fun of me but like on page 17, like reading every single thing, like word for word, like, am I pregnant? Like, you know, and yet I had to do it all over again. And I've had that experience many times in the last year. So I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah. So
by the way, this nurse, do you recognize her from anything?
I don't recall recognize her. Where's she from?
So it's Mindy Sterling. And when I saw her, what she's most famous from is the Austin Powers movies. But like when I saw her, I thought, oh, she's really famous. I recognize that face. And then I looked it up and it's really mostly just from the Austin Powers movies, actually. So I guess she did an incredible job there that she like went into my brain as like an earworm that I think she's like, you know, that girl who I've seen in so many things. But
Fraw.
Yeah, but other than those movies, I'm not sure. I mean, I looked at IMDb and like there's other things she's been in that I've seen, but I, you know, they didn't jump out at me. Let's go back to this conversation. Larry finally reluctantly tells her that he has a gerbil up his ass.
And he just like blurts it out.
This makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. Why does Larry tell her that he has a gerbil up his ass? Also, why is she so nonplussed? I guess she's doing a good job at her job. But like, it's not true, as he later says, and he was just saying it like I don't know why, to like mess with her, to test if she would violate HIPAA, which by the way, if she would like, or to test if she would tell, she would tell the doctor, I guess. Is that why? Because the doctor.
Yeah, I think he's just like wants to end the conversation, and he's like, okay, if you must know, I have a gerbil up my ass. Are you happy? Fuck you.
But I think that's how he's
saying it.
Yeah, but it makes it sound like, fine, I'll tell you what, I didn't want to tell because I was embarrassed. But again, it makes no sense. If you actually had a gerbil up your ass, you'd go to the emergency room. You would have never wrote it living in your body for 2 days.
Right? Well, some people like it.
I mean, yeah, so there's the old, you know, there's the famous Richard Gere, you know, urban legend, which I assume is not remotely factual, although I have no idea.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure there are people who do that, but I'm sure that if it doesn't come out immediately, like, I don't think it's a 2 days. I don't think it's like Benoit balls. Like, I don't think it's supposed to be there for like extended period. I mean, could be wrong. I've never tried it, but like, isn't it supposed to be like for like a few minutes at a time, an hour at a time? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not an expert on this. I'm looking at her.
If you've ever had a rodent living inside your body for sexual purposes, please send us an email. It can be anonymous. We won't say your name on the podcast. Unless you're Jared, then we probably will. But I'm very interested to know about this.
I'm looking at her her IMDb, and she appeared on two of the three TV shows discussed on this week's Renap, Saved by the Bell, The College Years, and Joey. Mm.
I did watch all of Joey, by the way.
Yeah, I watched a good amount of it.
Yeah,
I watched more than I should admit.
I'm a Matt LeBlanc completist, I guess. All right, so yeah, so he
have you seen Ed?
Wait, that was the fake show on Friends.
No, Ed is, I think, the movie where he's like a baseball player and there's also a monkey involved. I don't know exactly what happens.
Oh, in my head, that was a thing that he plays, Joey Tribbiani plays.
I don't think so. I think it's a real movie with Matt LeBlanc.
Oh, my greatest apologies to Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah, so eventually the doctor comes in and he's like, all right, what's the problem here? Yeah, and Larry's like, of course.
Yeah, she did not tell you about the gerbil.
Yeah, so Larry is heading out of the office and he sees that the woman he had been flirting with earlier is gone, and he goes to look at the sign-in sheet to see if he could maybe figure out her name, but it turns out that the receptionist reports, good news, I called the home office, and in the, you know, the 10 minutes that you were in seeing the doctor, they've changed the policy of the office as per your suggestion, and we no longer have a public sign-in sheet.
Yeah, and I think this is how they actually do it, but you tell me I'm wrong, that the list of who's coming, whether it's on paper or whether it's electronic or whatever, is controlled by the back, you know, the other side of the desk.
Yeah, that's how it should be done.
Yeah.
But, you know, she takes a little bit of pity on Larry, and she, you know, she hints at some names until Larry figures out who the person might have been, and he learns that her name is Paula.
Now, this, I want to talk about the receptionist for a second. Quite a strong Michigan accent I detected on this, the actress anyways, Allison Quinn. I don't know, maybe the character is from Michigan. Okay. Very self-effacing. She says, I only make $9 an hour. This is too difficult for me. Then she later says, I have no formal education. No formal education. She didn't even go to elementary school, this woman. Like, and I mean, I wonder almost like this is the kind of thing, almost like, you know, Crazy Eyes Killer, just to mention somebody randomly and for no particular reason at all, like is a character on that show who is like so famous and has an episode named after them and is like super memorable. But like, how much do these people do? Like, they see on the paper, this is what I'm supposed to say, and then how much do they create out of it? Because it seems like this receptionist is really trying to create a very funny story here. Like, and but I guess Larry's not interested. He's not engaged.
Yeah, I mean, I guess right. Sometimes Larry takes the bait. Sometimes he just, you know, says, "No, we need to get this episode."
I would be fascinated. You have no formal education. Like, how are you a receptionist here? Like, where did you come from? Anyway, came from the wilds of Michigan.
Yeah, so Larry is having some
lunch. The
actress
is actually British, by the way. The accent is that. Yeah. No, I'm joking. I'm making that up. I have no idea.
Okay. So Larry is having with Jeff, and he reports that he has a date with Paula, and they start to debate, you know, why would she have been at the gastroenterologist? What is wrong with her? For some reason,
this is very Seinfeldian.
Yeah, to gargle loudly for $50. And Jeff's like, sure, I'll take that bet.
Also Seinfeld. And he does go up to that table, you know, in the restaurant.
Yes, yeah. the Chinese restaurant. Yeah. So Larry does it. But then when soon thereafter he announces to the whole restaurant that he did it in order to win $50, Jeff says, no, I don't have to pay you. The bet is off.
Yeah, of course. Jeff's completely right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's completely right. The whole point is that you have to make an ass of yourself.
And by the way, the same thing happened in Seinfeld, where Elaine went up and tried to mouth to them. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the bet is that you have to look like an idiot.
Yeah. Although, see, what Larry did is a little bit different because it's after the fact. It's different than, actually, I don't know.
I think it's the principle is the same.
Yeah,
the
if you recognize like, Larry David, by myself. The way. Yeah, if you recognize Larry David at that restaurant, you're like, that was worth $50 to you? You would have done that for free.
Right, yeah. I mean, the point is you need to be very embarrassed in front of a whole group of strangers not to be able to say, I'm not really an idiot. I just did that to get $50. And everyone would be like, oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, you're still a different type of idiot. But
our mutual friend, Abe, offered me $5 million tonight to do something.
Oh, what was it?
Yeah, I mean, it was hypothetical. And he was saying, if somebody were to offer you $5 million, would you do it? And I said no. And then I had this whole thought process and I decided that you're not supposed to fight the hypo. But I decided he asked me an impossible question. He asked me a question that could never happen.
Okay. Well,
but anyways,
it sounds like you don't want to give any details, so I'll have to request.
I have no reason to not want to give them. It's just, it's going to lead us down a whole rabbit hole. We're not going to talk about crow for 20 minutes. So like, I'm fine to do so. Maybe do it offline. Maybe do it on a different episode.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's very inside Jewish baseball.
I once offered our friend Butch that if he ate it, he said he could eat an entire pie of pizza and like that sitting. He's like, oh, I'm so hungry. I could eat a whole pie of pizza. Yeah. And I said, if you eat a whole pie of pizza, I will pay for it. But if you eat less than a whole pie of pizza, you know, it's on you. So if you eat like 6.5 slices, you pay for it. And he like ate like 3 or 4 slices and then he had enough. But he insisted it could be done.
But that wasn't the bet. Yes.
Well, three no, of course he lost.
Like, 3 or 4 is like less than.
Yeah, that's,
like,
what, that's what I normally get.
No, I mean.
I normally get 3. I normally get 3.
So, well, I don't like when my wife gets a pie, because when my wife gets a pie, I'm going to end up eating like 5.5 or 6 because it's just like.
You could, it's just like if it's still there. Pizza, you just eat.
Yeah, and I tell my wife that I'm like, don't buy a pie, because what happens? My kids will each eat like half of one slice, and then
You'll finish theirs, and you'll eat two of your own. Yeah, and then she'll eat two, and then there's one more at the end of the night, and you're like, all right, I guess I'll have that
one too. There's one more at 9, one more at 11, and then at 2 in the morning. Yeah, I'm not gonna put one piece of, you know, yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
And then she'll say to me the next day, like, where's the rest of the pizza? I'm like, well, this is why I told you not to buy a pie. This was going to happen.
Yeah. So Jeff tells Larry that Tesla is coming to the bat mitzvah. And also this up-and-coming hip-hop star named John Legend, who I just signed as a client, will be coming as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I looked it up. John Lennon broke through in 2006, winning a bunch of Grammys, playing the Super Bowl preview show, the NBA All-Star halftime show. I do think it's believable, though, that in 2007, Larry David hasn't heard of him.
Yeah. 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 No, he's certainly much. I think he's probably much bigger now. At least it's more known.
There's no way Larry David hasn't heard of him in 2021. I mean, I would bet my parents haven't heard of him, actually. So maybe it's possible.
No. Yeah. My parents have not heard of him. There's no way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Larry's like, yeah. So, yeah, never heard of the guy. But, you know, maybe I should bring Paula. And in fact, you know, maybe Jeff and Susie, why don't we have a double date? We're going to go to the movie. Why don't you come to the movie and, you know, get to know her first? And Jeff thinks that's a wonderful idea.
Is it weird to double date on a very first date with your best friends? Seems like it's a 3-on-1 you've created. It's a little unfair.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could be an odd dynamic. I guess, like, if you're nervous about the date, it's like it could be helpful because, like, worst case scenario, you just kind of like revert into.
I understand that part. But if you get asked out on a date and the person says, oh, by the way, we're going on a double date with two of my best friends who you don't know at all, I'm like, there's something wrong with this person.
Yeah, no.
It's almost like introducing you to like your parents on the first date. It's why don't I get to know you before like I'm meeting these people in your life? Or you can't have a date without them. That's even weirder. Like, then we have no independence.
Yeah, no, it's certainly a very strange thing to do on a first date. Yeah, yeah. Almost as weird as saying my brother and sister are going to come along.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to that movie, though.
So we're at the movie, and...
Who hates the movie more? Nadia for this movie or Elaine for The English Patient?
Oh, that's a good call. I think Nadia makes it much further into this movie than Elaine makes it into The English Patient. Like, she makes it to, like, I think there's, like, 10 minutes left by the time.
Yeah, that is true. They say that. Yeah, Elaine hates it much earlier.
Yeah, like, basically immediately and, like, throughout. I don't think she even makes it through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Larry, you know, they're waiting online, and Larry, you know, wants to know, I don't know anything about dating anymore. It's been so long. What are the rules these days? And, you know, walking by them is what appears to be a intellectually handicapped man. And he's, you know, very loudly cutting the line, and, you know, everyone kind of lets him go because of his disability, and he goes straight to the front, gets a ticket, and carries on. And, you know, we fast forward and they see him inside the theater, and all of a sudden his handicap seems to have disappeared, and Larry realizes, oh, that guy just faked it. Like, wow, like, what a crazy thing to do, to just skip the line by pretending to that you're mentally disabled.
And kind of amazing to me and horrifying that all four of them, even Susie, Jeff, Paula, Larry, they're all like more like respecting him for like the move than they are like horrified at what he did.
Yeah, it's like when Baxter with
Superman. No,
like,
exactly.
I'm not even angry. I'm impressed.
Yeah, it's very surprising. And I mean, I guess on the other hand, if you're Larry David, why waste time pretending to be somebody different to go on a date? You want to be with somebody who wants to be with you as you are. Don't, you know, Cheryl tried to make you somebody else. So I'm going to be my worst self. And if they like me, then great. We'll move forward. And maybe everyone should do that on dates. Don't be your best self, be your worst self. Let them see what you're worst.
Yeah, no, it's certainly better as like a weeding out process. It's sure. Like, here's the worst of me. If you're uphill here.
Yeah.
Because this is what it's going to be.
Larry's a little thirsty is what's been going on the last couple episodes, though. So you'd think he'd want to, you know, do things that would, I don't know.
Yeah, so as they're watching the movie, Larry and Paula, both of them are squirming in their seats, and, you know, they each will be like, oh, what's wrong? And neither one will admit that, you know, any sort of discomfort or anything unusual is happening. And, you know, when they each, you know, follow up, oh, so why were you at the gastroenterologist? They both stick to their initial claims that they were just there for a, quote, checkup.
But they both say it in a way that makes it obvious that they're lying. And so it's this weird thing where, like, they're pretending that they don't know, but they obviously do. It's very strange.
Yeah, so as we said, we get towards the end of the movie, and there's a few minutes left, and Paula's like, I've had enough. This movie's terrible. And Larry refuses to go with her. You know, he explains that he's the type of guy. He finishes things that he starts. You know,
he gets in this angry argument with her.
Yeah, I'm reading a 500-page book. I get to the end. I have friends that I haven't been able to stand for 25 years because I'm the kind of guy that goes down with the ship. I'm not even the captain. I'm just the guy who keeps the captain company.
Yeah.
And Paula, she's had enough. She heads out and Susie's like, Larry, go with her. And Larry says, she doesn't understand etiquette. And Susie says, well, you know what? You don't understand women.
Larry's a complete moron here. This is inexplicable. Like, does Larry give a shit about this movie? Isn't he trying to get laid? Like, why would you possibly refuse to leave? It's like impossible for me to believe somebody would do this. And I am a person who finishes things. But it's like, unless you are not interested in the date anymore, you know what? Like, you know, Jerry chooses the voice over the girl. And maybe, you know, Larry says, I'd rather see the rest of this movie than be on a date with that girl, which is a fine decision to make. But like, he expects her to be waiting for him at the end. And so does Jeff. It makes no sense to me.
Well, if it really is only 5 minutes, it's like not completely crazy that she has to be like waiting. Doesn't matter how many minutes
after that conversation. No, okay. If you don't understand women or men. Like,
I guess, or men.
There's no way somebody's hanging around for the rest of the date at this point with you. You're the asshole who chose the movie over them. You don't know there's 5 minutes left for sure. Anyway, you know.
Right.
I think it's crazy. It's crazy to leave a movie with 5 minutes left. Like, if you leave halfway through, that's fine. But why commit for 95% of it?
Yeah. That's weird. And Susie speaks when they come outside. She speaks like one of the most wise words of the whole series, which is, you were right, and now you're alone.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is like one of the first things that, like, when you're getting married, everyone's like, always tells you, like, it's better to be happy than to be right. Like, it's fine.
I mean, I think it's said better on The Big Lebowski. You're not wrong. You're just an asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think specifically in the realm of dating, where it's just like, it's not that important to be right in these stupid arguments. Just like, give in and be happy instead.
Yeah, exactly.
But Larry's all he concerned about. He's like, well, you know, he had a tickle in her anus. So, like, I don't know how far this was going anyway.
HIPAA violation, Larry.
I don't think he's bound by HIPAA.
Yeah, I don't think so he is. But he should appreciate as much as anyone that if you have a tickle in the anus, you don't want that news spread.
Yeah, and like, you should hold that against that, buddy.
Yeah, also that, yes. You're bald. You have a tickle in your anus.
You're bald.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're at work the next day, and Larry is really commiserating with Antoinette about how the date went, and he really does not want to go to the bat mitzvah alone, and she's thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe I could fix you up with my next-door neighbor. She's a belly dancer. Of course, my, you know, young, attractive.
How has this never come up before?
Yeah, I'm sure she would love to date Larry David.
Well, Antoinette tells her, you know, that billionaire that I work for.
Right, fair. Yeah. He's not interested because she had a nose ring. And, it's just not going to happen. And, you know, the man comes over to look at the office next door, as we had been told. And Larry realizes that this is a good opportunity to use the new trick that he learned last night at the movies. And he himself pretends to be a mentally disabled person to scare the guy off, telling him that, you know, I'm so excited. I'm going to be your neighbor. We'll have to go for lunch every single day. And
say it the way he says it.
Yeah. You know, the trick works and the guy is scared off. He doesn't, he doesn't really want to have to deal with this Larry character that he's met, and he runs off.
Yeah, this is when Tesler comes in. I mixed it up.
Yeah, before. Talk about bad timing, because it's at this moment that Matt Tesler had arrived to thank Larry for recommending him for Lewis's pilot, for which he got the job.
Because that's what you do on television. You show up in person to thank people.
Yeah, and he sees the end of Larry's little performance, and he's extremely offended, saying, you know, my 10-year-old son is mentally challenged, and my son Max would not find that funny. And Larry's like, listen, you know, I was just doing it as a test to see how he would react.
Yes.
And obviously he failed.
Michael does not, Tesler does not buy
it. Yeah, Tesler is not buying it. He's not appeased. And he says, my son has an office on the right hand of Jesus.
Yeah. Well, why an office? I was confused by that.
Yeah, I didn't really understand.
Well, his 10-year-old son has an office?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really, yeah.
So, but by the way, now we know why he was missing up shtummy in those stupid Yiddish words. He's not a Jew. Unless, his son's not a Jew anyway.
Right.
He's a Jew with it. He doesn't say that he prays with Jesus or he worships him. He just has an office on the right hand of Jesus. He's in Jesus's, his shop.
But you know what's really funny, Tesler says? A big Hollywood writer and producer who sticks gerbils up his ass.
Yeah.
And Larry's like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, I heard from my cousin, and I'm going to go tell everyone. And now Larry's really scared.
He should be.
He should be, because everyone's going to know.
But let's think of all those HIPAA violations. What does she do? She manages the office, and she knows about it? So what the hell is going on in that office?
No, it's the nurse.
So it's just one person with a big mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's the only one he told that about. Sorry. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. He told the nurse. The nurse is his cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So Larry's having lunch with Richard Lewis now.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Because he says in the earlier season, my cousin is the manager of his office. But yeah, but then later on, his cousin is the nurse. So I guess she's a nurse slash manager.
Yeah. They retconned. They retconned it to the nurse.
Yeah. She's just, yeah, she does a lot. She's a very,
yeah. Yeah. So Richard is furious at Larry for having recommended Tesla. He's rooting the pilot. And Larry's like, what are you talking about? I didn't recommend him. I put quotes around the recommendation. It was a non-recommend. And Richard's like, you know, it would be one thing if the recommendation came from a skinhead or from Bin Laden. And they get into a side argument about whether it's Bin Laden or Bin Laden. They agree that, you know, it's definitely Bin Laden. Bin Laden, it sounds more like a Jewish shirt maker in Manhattan.
Yeah. Go to Bin Laden's.
And as they're arguing, Richard's like, oh, he sees Larry like squirm a little bit in his chair. And he's like, oh, it's true, isn't it? And he's like, you know, that gerbil rumor is all over town, all over the internet. And, you know, a guy walks by. He gives Larry a minor glance. He's like, you see, yeah, he probably read Gerbil magazine. You're on the cover.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the word seems to be out. So Larry heads home, and the Black family is already amidst a raucous debate about whether or not this gerbil rumor can be true about Larry.
Yeah.
And Leon explains, this gerbil got in the elevator, hit up, went up your asshole.
Yeah. But wait, we skipped, is life too short? It's too short, isn't it?
It's too short, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that line. How does this rumor spread so fast? Like, how does it get to, like, the Blacks? We don't seem to have a lot of social circles with Larry's. I don't know. Do they have Google alerts for him?
It's 2007? All over Tumblr.
Yeah. By the way, I am reading this now out of curiosity. I'm on Snopes, and we're discussing Richard Gere and the gerbil. Can we get into this?
Yeah, let me know what you see.
All right. Hoary urban legend reports a celebrity was taken to a hospital emergency room to have a gerbil removed from his rectum. That's the claim. Richard Gere was taken to a hospital emergency room to have a gerbil removed from his rectum. Rating, false. Origin. Origin. The following is a true account. A 26-year-old male arrived at the ER complaining of rectal bleeding, too embarrassed to provide an accurate history, but provides the examining doctor a clue. There might be something stuck in my rear end. Examination reveals a non-tender abdomen, but a rectal exam shows blood coming from the anus. A speculum exam reveals bloody stool and a dead gerbil. Apparently, through the cardboard tubing from a paper towel roll, the rodent had been forced into his rectum. Once the animal was in, the tube was pulled out. The idea... Oh, my God. This is actually very painful to read. Should I keep reading this? This sounds very disturbing. No, I'm going to make an editorial decision, and decide we're going to stop.
Yeah, okay. Why don't we cut to the part where Richard Gere, in theory, gets involved?
Okay, all right. Okay.
Or is there even no such anything, and it just became a thing?
This tale has been applied to various public figures who are known or believed to be homosexual. Oh, so it might be homophobia. And is stuck with...
Is this a homophobic podcast now?
Oh, man.
We don't condone this.
Yes.
And we don't...
Okay, but why is it stuck with Richard Gere? Okay. Although the legend honed in on various targets when it first appeared, it has clung tenaciously to Mr. Gere's name since at least the mid-80s. Rumor that he had an emergency gerbilectomy, that's actually kind of funny, at Cedars-Sinai Hospital has spread far and wide, and countless doctors and nurses claim to have participated in, been on hand during, or heard from a reliable colleague about the procedure.
This was a 30-person operation. all the doctors.
Hold on.
The
it's literally in parentheses, the same joke. Cedars-Sinai is apparently the best-staffed hospital in the world, since literally thousands of different doctors and nurses claim to have been on duty at the time Mr. Gere was allegedly brought in for treatment. It's sort of like Woodstock. Everyone was there.
Right. There were 7 million people at Woodstock.
So you should never believe any doctor or nurse, because they're all liars and they're all HIPAA violators. The rumor spread was aided by an anonymous prankster who, not long after the film Pretty Women led to a tremendous increase in Gere's popularity, flooded fax machines in Hollywood with a phony press release purportedly issued by the Association for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. So some one asshole, like, just, oh my goodness, that's terrible that this one guy.
We're really getting it. We're going to get it from the right and from the left on this one.
Wait, why? Wait, who have we offended politically?
We've offended the LGBT, and we've offended PETA. I guess those are both the left. Okay,
no, I don't know what they are. We're not on the side of any of these people, obviously. The people spreading these rumors and the people motivated by homophobia.
So it really is just kind of random that it became something associated with Richard Gere.
Versions of the following. Okay, there was a UPI article about it.
So basically the story is this once happened to a person and then people decided that that person was Richard Gere.
Yes, basically. And then thousands of doctors assert that they were there personally. So, yes. All right.
Okay.
I'm going to spread a rumor. It was about Larry David.
Yeah, so Larry denies it.
Yeah.
Everyone's very relieved. And, you know, the kids announce we're all packed up. And it finally hits home with Larry that they're really moving out. Mm. And on a last minute whim, Larry gets the idea to ask Loretta if she will accompany him to the bat mitzvah. And she's like, you know what? Why not? And she does. Mm. So we head over to the bat mitzvah, and Larry and a fully decked out Loretta are sitting at a table with Richard and Chacha and the Funkhausers. And Richard and Larry are still arguing. Wait, hold on.
When does Richard say, I'll have a mental patient face off with you any day? That's when they're fighting earlier. When they get distracted by,
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I had a lot. There were a lot of lines in that scene I really liked, but that's okay.
Yeah, I pared it down.
That's okay. Listen, let's get to the fuckman. I appreciate how upfront the fuckman is. He heard a rumor about his friend. He just asked straight up.
Yeah,
you want from friends.
Yeah, he's like, they're like talking about something. He's like, all right, I have to know.
Yeah. Did you really? Actually, that's not true. What you want from friends is to mind their own fucking business, because, you know, what you do in the privacy of your own bedroom between you and your gerbil is no one's business but yours and the gerbils. But
yeah, so Larry realizes he needs to take charge of the situation. And when Jeff and Susie, you know, welcome their guests to start the toast, Larry gets up, and he's going to be the first one to give a toast.
Yeah.
And he first, you know, gives like a little intro about, oh, I remember when Sammy was born, but, you know, nobody cares about that. I would like to address a rumor that has been spreading about me, a very vicious rumor.
Yeah. I love Tesla's like Jack Nicholson-esque smile when they cut to him.
Yeah. And it's completely false. That never happened. You know, that being said, I do have a slight tickle in my anus.
Yeah. They go from Tesla and they immediately show Cheryl with Glenn from the No Fly Zone.
Yeah. So,
Can I ask a question? Like, why is Tesla so vindictive? Like, even if you think that Larry made an inappropriate joke and mocked the mentally disabled and that's horrible and I get all that, but like, he did you a massive favor for your career and you're going out of your way to like screw him over, basically. Maybe this is why you can't get jobs in Hollywood, Matt. You should stop being so vindictive and evil to people.
He's very defensive over his son.
I understand being disgusted with Larry, but like you're going around and like doing sort of a similar equivalent to what Larry did, which is, you know, like talking about people, you know, mocking people for their medical challenges.
Yeah. So I hear you. So Larry, he sees Cheryl and Glenn. He goes over to them. You know, even makes polite conversation with him. Mentions that he now is wearing the No Fly Zone.
Maybe that's what gives you the tickle in the anus. Maybe it's their fabric. We need to ask him about that.
That's worth exploring.
Yeah.
You know, they excuse themselves to dance, and Larry gazes over the dance floor and sets eyes on Loretta and invites her over to dance. And you know, everyone is watching them together on the dance floor, and their amazing chemistry together.
Yeah.
And in one of the, I would say, true highlights of the series, this is one of the things that I remember most vividly about the show, and like recite all the time when we're talking about great Kerr moments. But you get this incredible season-ending montage as we flash to a scene of Larry and Loretta in bed with the rest of the black children jumping on them in the morning. We see Larry screaming from the sidelines of Daryl's soccer game. I think he's just like yelling soccer at one point. He's like arguing with the ref. And like, I think it seems like he gets kicked out of the game. So he just like takes Daryl with him and they're off. Yeah. they're driving in the car. This kid's screaming in the back. They go to the movies, screaming at the screen, including Larry. He's a part of the family now.
Yeah.
The best part of this, I think, is, you know, Susie starts yelling at Larry. Then like Loretta.
This is the home run. Yeah. This is Loretta, the home run to end the season.
Yeah, Loretta cuts her off and, you know, basically says, you know, you yell at my man. And like Larry's just like, why, like waving in the background, bye.
Yeah.
And then finally we get a family photo. Happy holiday from Larry and the Blacks. Mm. And we have reached the end of season 6.
I want to jump right into the writing here, because here's my thing. Like, first of all, Loretta at the bat mitzvah, Vivica A. Fox's hair, it looks incredible. So I want to know who did her hair for that bat mitzvah, because if I ever need my hair done for bat mitzvah, that's where I'm going. She looks incredible. But like you just mentioned it, like Loretta telling off Susie at the end of the season was the moment I was looking forward to from the moment that this season started. Like, I remembered what's going to happen. I didn't remember how, but I remember Larry's going to end up with Cheryl's going to leave. Larry's going to end up with Loretta, and Susie's going to be talking shit to Larry, as she always does. And Loretta's going to step up and say, you get the fuck out of here. You don't talk to my man like that. And like, but I got to say, like, watching the episode, I'm kind of disappointed by how quick, like, they escalated the LD Loretta relationship from 0 to 100 with zero explanation in the course of one Ray Charles song. There's no flashbacks or clips or anything. It's just suddenly we're meant to believe that they're deeply in love based on literally absolutely nothing. Like, last thing Loretta thought is that Larry was getting hard-ons for Auntie Ray. So it's just like Auntie May.
Using the N-word.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, we never get a resolution to the tickle in the anus. What happened to the tickle in the anus? That just went away. So, like, I don't understand. Vulture loves this episode, ranks number four all time. But, like, wow. Other than Loretta legendarily telling off Susie, and what a moment that is. A whole season I looked forward to that, and it hit it out of the park. But, like, other than that, there's not so much love about this episode. I hate Tesla, as I said. So I will say this episode, pretty, pretty good. Two pretties, episode ranked 49 out of 60 for me.
Yeah, I'm basically right there with you. I'll go a little bit higher and say 2.5, pretty, pretty, pretty good. Because, you know, I think there are several good moments. You know, like the Richard Lewis conversation you mentioned is really funny. I think the doctor office stuff is pretty spot on and funny. And the closing montage, obviously a home run. But yeah, overall, it's like it's really definitely not one of the best, and a lot of silly stuff that doesn't work. Mm.
So let's talk about these ratings now. I'm looking at our season-by-season rankings, and with one glaring exception, we've been pretty simpatico. In fact, almost eerily so, except that you always grade. You're a slightly more generous grader than me. You're always about 10 to 20% higher. So season, we both have the best seasons, both tied, season two and season four. You give season two's average episode 3.6 pretties. I give season two and four's episodes 3.4 pretties. So we're both exactly tied on the exact same two seasons as the best seasons. And then on the opposite spectrum, we both rank season one the lowest. And again, you're at 2.7. I'm at 2.55. So again, I'm just a little bit lower than you. And then season five, again, we're almost exactly the same. You're a little higher. You're 2.85. I'm 2.75. And then season three, which is behind only seasons two and four, is you're at 3.25. I'm at 3.1. So basically the point is, other than the season six, which I haven't mentioned, we'll get to that in a second. We both agree seasons two and four are the best. Season three, a little bit behind it. And then season five lags behind that. And then season one lags behind that. Except for season six, where there's this massive, massive disagreement where you have it tied as the second best season. Third best season. So you have two and four tied for first, and then three and six tied for, I guess that would be third. And I have it by far the lowest ranked season. And I'm not really sure why. I looked like the cumulative ranks of like all the other rankers that I have. And they actually have this season. They have seasons two and three the best, but then they have the season next. And so I'm not sure what it is about the season that I just didn't appeal to me. I don't know if I've become a tougher grader in season six or what. We finally get Leon in there, which I was very excited for, but I ranked the season the lowest season so far. And I'm really, I don't know why I did that. Honestly, I've been enjoying the episodes, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I would say it's probably you're holding it to a higher standard at this point. That could be, you know, a lot of these episodes are for certainly better than season one. I mean, I remember we were watching season one. We were like, this show is like not that good yet. Like, it was like very rough. There was like little glimmers of good stuff, but I think we're getting much more consistent episodes now than we ever got back then.
Yeah, that's probably fair. All right. Well, let's get to the come with Gail. To me, obviously, it's Loretta. She was also episode one for me this season, and she closes it off. She comes with LD to the bat mitzvah. She comes into his life, and then, as we said, she tells Susie off. So, yeah, she opens and closes the season with come with Gail points for me.
Yeah, 100% agree. This is an easy one.
Mm. Yeah, and so she finally who did you pick again in the first episode of the season? All right, you picked Funkman. All right, that's good. Funkman was also good. That's fair. Yeah, but so Loretta clears the win here, clears the board, and she will not be the member of this family that has the longest lasting impact on this show. Even though at this point they both have the same number of come with guy points.
Oh wow, yeah, that's gonna change.
Yes, I don't think that she will be able to stay neck and neck with Leon for too long. Probably not going to be a big surprise here for me anyways, but for you, who is the fucking asshole?
It's got to be Tesla. I mean, he comes in, he asks this really nice favor, Larry delivers, and he, you know, as you said, he proceeds to try to screw him over. And of course, you know, Larry was not on his best behavior. I'm certainly what Larry did was very offensive, but you know, this guy just did this massive favor for you. At least just, you know, just keep your head down. You know, you don't have to be nice to him, but don't try to go screw him over.
Yeah. I agree. And again, Michael McKean he's just an incredible actor, I guess. Ralph, let's bring up the Holocaust for no reason. Ralph Fiennes, who plays Amon Goth in Schindler's List. does such a good job in that movie that I despise Ralph Fiennes so much that Fiennes, I don't know how to say his name. Anytime I see him in any movie, I hate him. I despise that man because in my head, he's like this incredibly evil Nazi death camp commander. And it's just like, all I'm saying is that he's an incredible actor, but he's like too good for me, apparently. So I hate him. And I really hate Michael McKean also, I think. And it's weird because like he was on SNL. He's done so many things. But like in my head, he's this guy. He's Tesler. And then he's, you know, the really annoying brother, Better Call Saul. And so, yeah, that's Michael McKean, unfortunately, for me. Yeah, and so he celebrity cameos. We got him. We got John Legend. But it's late. Let's get to the postman.
Yeah, let's do that.
Postman! Postman, come here! Tell the neighborhood!
All right, first email is from Jared Jerome. He says, what the hell was that? Brutal, brutal episode. Maybe I'm just pissy because something was wrong with my feed and I had some stage director voicing over the action telling me what was going on. Yeah, he like texted me while he was watching.
Wait, what
like,
happened? I'm confused.
He's like, why am I hearing voiceover in this episode? I'm like, it's probably like a setting on like your HBO. But he couldn't figure it out. Like, he said he turned it off and he came back. I don't know. He says, I don't think that's what it is. It was just bad. There was just one main storyline. Larry has something up his ass that doesn't really go anywhere of any meaningful resolution. The montage with Larry becoming the father / husband to the Blacks out of the absolute blue made absolutely no sense. And that's how you end the season. What was it tying together? Ridiculous. What about literally stealing an exact idea about convincing a doctor's office to change rules only to have the suggested rule changed immediately to be put into effect and then immediately hurt Larry?
Yeah, we forgot to mention that that happened in season one.
Yeah. The show is based around Larry being socially inappropriate, but in this episode, he's just clueless about society's conventions. He knows he has to write his name down at the doctor's office. This isn't his first visit. He knows you have to tell the nurse your condition. He knows you can't give a speech at a bat mitzvah about having a thing up your ass. Just completely lost. A bunch of random Larry ideas strewn together to make an episode with the bat mitzvah as a backdrop, simply to have a place for all the characters to meet up at the end. But again, nothing came from this. Sopranos used to do that too. They'd always get all the characters and Artie Bucco's at the end in some cheesy way. Seinfeld connection. Two Seinfeld-related storylines bits. First is the whole proctologist, gastroenterologist thing, which clearly Larry is obsessed with. A million to one shot, Doc. A million to one. Larry, very uncomfortable with anything ass-related, apparently. Second is the gargle in the restaurant with Jeff reminded me of Elaine grabbing the egg roll off the table at the Chinese restaurant for $50. Yeah, we talked about that. Here, Jeff reneges. Larry announces to everyone why he gargled. Asshole of the week is Larry for making such a shitty episode. And for giving Trump the perfect blueprint on how to mock someone with a physical disability, I'm sure Chester has Michael McKean as the asshole of the week because of your association with his character for Better Call Saul that you hate so much.
No, but it's not true. It's the other way around. I hate him in Better Call Saul because I hated him from Curb.
Right.
Though he never had a chance with me. He's like rough ends.
Yeah, he said he's bad both there and here, but he did not write this episode. So therefore, I guess he is not the asshole of the week. Come with Guy. He gives to Rich Eisen for showing off for a split second at the bat mitzvah in the background. Did you guys notice that? What the hell was that? I did not notice that.
I've heard Rich Eisen talk about that. He likes to talk about all these different things that he's been on, but I didn't notice it. I thought it was a later season that he was on, but does he come back? Maybe he comes back. I don't know. I will say this to Jared, though. Like, and I think I did this once to you. I was complaining about some movie, and then I mentioned the context which I saw the movie. Like, well, that's how you're supposed to see this movie. Like, you know, try to watch the show without, like, there being another voiceover the whole time. It might affect your enjoying
it's possible.
A little bit.
Yeah. All right. So his ranking is, if you couldn't tell my review so far, I have this episode ranked 60 out of 60 with a bullet. Utter trash. P good. Not even half a pretty. That's 1/5 of a pretty. 4.8 no pretties. And he says, I rushed to get this email in under the wire. At least I got to see Leon in a couple of scenes, but even he wasn't that good in this episode. That's impossible. Rant over.
Mm. Wow. Tell us how you really feel.
I don't think Jared liked the episode. All right. Next email.
No, you're right.
William
this episode
Blake.
Is much better than like a lot of like the AAMCO AMCO episode, affirmative action.
Season one has a lot of rough episodes. So William Blake writes in. He says, hey, Alex and Av, my name is Will, and I'm giving you a non-recommend. We got a Rich Eisen cameo, I think. Everyone's seen Rich Eisen. Alex and Av, what was the worst bat mitzvah speech you have experienced in person? I don't know. Nothing really comes to mind.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I can think of like a very bad bridesmaid speech that I've heard, but I've never heard of a bat mitzvah speech. That's not true. I have a great one. I completely forgot about this.
All right,
well, it's bar mitzvah, not bat mitzvah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. It's going to sound made up because Kristen Wiig has a whole stand-up or has a whole like comedy bit about this exact thing happening. So I, without getting into the whole backstory, I have a first cousin and his ex-wife lives in France and is a very big weirdo and they're divorced. She's like not at all part of the family, but when the kid had his bar mitzvah, you know, the parents come together. So, it's my first cousin's ex-wife is the mother of this boy at this bar mitzvah. And like it gets up and is like, instead of giving a speech to my son, what I want to do is sing. And then she proceeds to do this long song. And I have the video. I can share it with you. Remind me afterwards, as if she's like Celine Dion or something. And she's just singing while everyone is grimacing. She's a terrible singer. And it's her son's moment. So she's like totally stolen the show. And Kristen Wiig has a whole bit, which I once heard on a podcast where she was talking about when she first moved to Hollywood and attending like bar mitzvahs where like these moms would do this because they were like 35 years old and like, it's incredible because then it actually literally happened in my family. So yeah, that's my answer.
Good stuff. All right. Good question, Will. He says, come with Gal.
I mean, if you're that kid, you want to kill yourself and you never want to go near your mother again in front of your friends. You're like dying of embarrassment. How can you do that to 13-year-old boys are embarrassed about everything? It's like have the no self-awareness. Oh my God. It was glorious.
Yeah. You just basically light them on fire at that point.
sorry to my first cousin once removed David for laughing, but you're older now. You're fine.
Yeah. I'm sure you think it's funny at this point.
Yeah.
He agrees with us. Come with Gal goes to Loretta. She saves Larry from being alone at the party. That's enough. Also, you have to win for voluntarily being with Larry. Fucking asshole. He agrees with us also. Matt Tesler, because yes. Fuck that guy. He diverges with us on the rating, and he gives it 4.5 pretties.
Mm. Well, so take it William, up with Jared.
Yeah. Will and Vulture, very high on this episode.
Yeah. By the way, you know how like every week on this podcast I tell some insane story and then I go like try to follow up with the person
and then it turns out that the story wasn't quite that.
No, like the sock guy, the underwear guy, and then the guess who guy. So I was like, should I message my 19-year-old first cousin was removed and ask him about his mom singing at his bar mitzvah? But I was like, you know what, That's not something I'm going to do. That's a zero upside.
I mean,
situation.
From my perspective, I see no downside.
Yeah. This is a kid who like sees me as an adult and I see him as a kid. I've never spoken to him about anything other than like small little things. I'm going to message him. Hey, did your mother completely embarrass you at your bar mitzvah? And did you want to kill yourself? And he's going to say like, no, fuck you. That's my mother. I love her mother. How dare you talk to me about that? I barely know who you are. Or he's going to say, yeah, it was really embarrassing. Or thanks for bringing it up, asshole. So
Yeah,
maybe he'll laugh about it. But yeah, it's funny. I would ask. In fact, I will ask his father, my cousin. I'm close enough with him, and I know he doesn't like his wife. So I'm going to ask him. You know what? I'm going to do this. I'm not going to message him now because to do it at 2:30 in the morning would be weird. But I'm going to message him, and I'm going to say, at David's bar mitzvah, that was a weird thing your ex-wife did, wasn't it? And I think he'll hopefully laugh. So I will report back on that. Okay.
All right. I look forward to hearing the response.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, by the way, email. I'm looking at the Vulture ranking to see why they have this number 4.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of that one. It's like they talk about, you know, Loretta cuts Susie off midstream, snapping off, you better get your ass out of my house, you fucking bitch, before slamming the door.
Yeah, the montage is so iconic.
Yeah. The last minute of this episode is so good. Yeah. But it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. Zach Brooks writes in. He says, wait, that was the season finale? Oof. This episode was a real slog, and I didn't realize it was the finale until it ended. Did you guys have bar mitzvah themes? I couldn't tell if Sammy did on the show. Yeah, mine was like something like related to like Jerusalem 3000 or something like that. It was like the 3000th anniversary.
That was the choice that you made?
I don't even remember. We had like different like centerpieces of like different locations in Jerusalem. Yeah, it was kind of late, but it was a nice party.
Oh, my bar mitzvah parsha involves the story of Bilam and the ass, the talking ass. And I do remember my dad saying to me, he's like, well, it's your bar mitzvah after all, so why don't we have a talking ass as the centerpiece at every table?
Did
supporting and loving father, I guess.
Do we know if Bilam had a gerbil up his ass?
Yes, perhaps. Maybe the horse had a gerbil up his ass, and that's why he was so uncomfortable crossing the road.
Yes. Yeah, he says, this is a great episode for Leon, but that's about it. And he gives a 1.5 pretties. Mm. And finally, we end the season off with Olin Allen. And he says, it took me way longer than it should have to realize what the gerbil payoff would be. I did walk out of Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine with about 10 minutes ago, despite having a comfortable seat. Only reason I went was because I was so horrified at how bad the Harry Potter film was. that I was dragged along to that I felt I had to hang around and catch another film for my ticket price, and I needed to get to work. A reasonable episode.
Hold on. So he goes to see Harry Potter.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, the only movie I've ever walked out of a movie theater that I remember was Harry Potter. One of the Harry Potters. I don't remember which one.
Yeah.
But I had never seen the show. I read the book. I knew nothing about the story. I took my youngest brother, actually, as a birthday present because he was like 14 at the time and like couldn't go to a movie. Or no, he was younger. He couldn't go to a movie alone. So I took him, and it was so boring and confusing. And I mean, now I've read the books, I probably would enjoy it. In fact, I know that because I've watched them all with my kids and I did enjoy them. But I actually said to him, I said, listen, I don't want to be mean, but I'm just going to go sit on a bench outside. So hold on. So Olin does that. Leaves the Harry Potter movie in the middle and says, but I want to get my tickets priced worse, so I'm going to go watch Bowling for Columbine. Which, by the way, Olin, I don't know why you hated Bowling for Columbine. I mean, you know, I have my issues with Michael Moore, but I thought that was his best movie, actually.
Yeah, it's definitely entertaining and, you know.
No. Yeah. I'm sorry. Roger Meese's his best movie. Bowling for Columbine, the first half is very good. The second half, he gets completely off the rails, right? That's the gun control one, right?
That's adventure. I don't remember it that well.
Yeah, the second half is so like he starts like knocking door to door and claiming from the 30 seconds of clip that he shows us that in Canada nobody locks.
Oh, does he confront strangers in that movie?
Yeah, but like I lived in Canada, everyone locked their doors. Like I'm sure you found 10 doors to knock on. Like that's the real scientific evidence we have here. So yeah, yeah. Oh, Michael.
Yeah, Michael Moore's like evidence isn't always the best. Yeah,
Michael Moore's movies start very hot and then quickly taper off into like mania, I think.
Yeah, well, it's easier to do the here's my big theory part of the movie, and then when it's like, and here is where I back it up with evidence.
Yeah,
part is harder.
Yeah, but even like his Fahrenheit 9/11, I remember I thought the whole first half of the movie was actually very good, and I mean a little slick, and you know, but like, and he actually did make a point I remember for that movie of like posting like links online of evidence and stuff. But then the whole second half of the movie, as I recall, was just like very, very sad that somebody has lost a life. And the point is, you know, that George Bush was responsible for this person's son who volunteered for the army under false pretenses that he died. And that is very sad and tragic. But like half the movie is spent mourning the loss in war. And like we are all aware of the loss in war. This isn't like a new concept. And so it was like just had like people die in very, very good wars. Also, soldiers die for good causes and for bad causes. We know like this is a bad cause, but like, I don't know. I felt like it was half the movie was just like trying to pull at emotional heartstrings with like misleading. I don't know. Anyway, this is a Michael Moore podcast, right?
Yeah, we're going to cover all his movies. After
we got a time check right now.
It's 2:46, 2:47.
2:47 in the morning. Yeah. I'm going to stop talking about Michael Moore.
Well, we were talking about George Bush earlier, so I guess we've come full circle.
Yes.
So Owen says a reasonable finish to a reasonable season. And he gives it 3 pretties out of 5. Come with Gal, mainly because Ned and Stacy is maybe my second favorite 90s American sitcom, and Nadia Dejani was the best thing in it. I will go for Paula, happily going out with ball guys. She meets in the gastroenterologist waiting room, also offering Larry some freedom from what sounded like a 1920s silent romantic drama. Fucking asshole of the week, of course, so obvious it has to be the soccer referee that shouts slide tackle, number 2 block. He was either calling the Renaissance son by the color of his skin when noting the supposed tackle, which is obviously bad, or even worse. But if he was calling him by his name, well, I just absolutely detest that is one of my bugbears. Need consistency. Always refer to players by number in jersey. They never know everybody's name, and it seems to be a sense of chummy favoritism when using it.
This is an even excellent worse, point by Olin.
Even worse.
No, but though, you would never see it. The NBA would never say foul on LeBron. They say foul on 2-3.
Yeah. Even worse, though, are referees who are aware of the perception and then attempt to overcorrect and make negative decisions. Also, not a hint of a slide tackle, or he called it far too late. Yeah. But most egregiously, he uses American sports style signals to tell Larry to go away than more traditional FIFA-approved methods, including use of a red card to let Gary go away. Thank you, Olin, as always.
That's great. That's what Jared brings in like football. Olin brought it in soccer, and it was much more enjoyable, actually.
Yeah, I always love Olin's assholes of the week because he picks up on like very petty things.
Yeah, but also I love the passion about something that like if the good grace of God go I, you know, like if we grew up in slightly different circumstances around the world, I would be like
we would be all over
soccer.
That.
Instead, it's like soccer I like casually like, but don't even notice like the lack of slide tackle. But the referee thing is universal. Yeah, he calls it penalty on black. That's insane. Was he wearing a black jersey? No, I don't think so.
I don't remember. We're done with Helen Zeebell.
Okay. All right. So next week, listen, next week we're off Curb for 2 years. We'll be coming back in the fall of 2009. Right now it's the fall of 2007 with Funkhauser's Crazy Sister. They take a week next week off. Av, I have bad news for you and good news for you. The bad news is that next week we will not be doing a typical episode of this podcast. We will not be reviewing season 7, episode 1, Funkhauser's Crazy Sister, next week. We'll be doing that the following week because I have good news for you, which is that we will be releasing an episode of this podcast. We will have a very special guest and a very special theme. Is there anything else we should say? Or
no, I think next week's episode will be pretty good.
I don't know, Orcel. It will not be Larry David, but yeah, it will be.
It will not be Larry David.
Yeah.
Or will it?